Singer, composer, and arranger Peter Eldridge has been called a superb musical alchemist, and critics have remarked about his catchy, beautiful tunes with insightful lyrics that are both personal and universal. Peter Eldridge, welcome to the show.
Hi, Keith. Nice to see you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Peter, you've had an amazing career so far. You're co-founder of the double Grammy-winning vocal jazz group, the New York Voices. And I know that you all have been recording and touring now for 25 years.
Yeah, this is our 25th anniversary. And had you ever told me that I'd be in a vocal jazz group for 25 years, I would have been like, excuse me? You know, so, but yeah, it keeps chugging along and it actually keeps improving. Like, I think it keeps getting better. And like, we haven't plateaued or peaked. We just keep trying to do better. And so I think that's what keeps it interesting for us. But yeah, we looked at each other and just kind of go, where did that time go? You know, but here we are.
And as a member of that group, I know that you've influenced countless vocalists over the years. But in 2001, you broke out and released your first of four solo recordings.
Yeah.
And we'd really love to hear something from one of those CDs today.
Oh, sure. My pleasure. I'm going to start. I've never really had a hit, but if I had one, it would probably be this song. It's a song called Postcards and Messages. It's off the first album I recorded. It's an album called Fool No More. And yeah, it came out about, 11 years ago. It's a song about living in New York, which I have lived in New York. I just moved last weekend out of New York after being there for a long time. And so, but this is a bit of a statement about being in a city with all these people and never really talking to anybody and the weirdness of that and also just kind of communication in our modern day and age. So anyway, yes, Postcards and Messages.
There's nothing like a pretty picture of some exotic place to skim the surface, cloud the issue, kick a little sand in everybody's face. It's a quick fix with a happy ending and a wish you were here. Just tell them where you've been. Information. Keep it short and sweet and leave the rest to speculation. Don't you get too close, drop a funny line, an anecdote. Don't you get too close, drop a funny line, they're bound to quote. Keep on sending postcards, leaving messages. Take care. send it off in one direction. Keep it short and sweet and all for some abstract connection. Don't you get too close, gotta keep the shug and jive alive. Don't you get too close as you're gonna get to real life. Keep on sending postcards, leaving messages. Sincere regards, incomplete sentences. Too bad, I guess you're not home. 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 Hello, sending my best. All the rest you'll have to guess. Hello, sending my best. You'll have to guess. Just keep on guessing. Just keep them all guessing. Just keep them all guessing and guessing and guessing.
Yeah, that's a really infectious kind of tune.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, people always ask me where this song came from, and to be honest, I think, you know, the little riff came first, and then I just kind of, it was a strange little piano riff, and then it kind of built from there. And I always say this is sort of like, if I hope this doesn't offend anyone, Riverdance on acid, sort of. It's sort of like a Celt, you know, it has that soul, with that kind of Americana kind of section, and yeah, it just all kind of morphed together in a very strange way. And it was a tune that you call them gifts, you know, when they just sort of happen, and that doesn't happen a lot. You know, I've written a lot of tunes and not a lot of them were gifts. You know, they take a lot of work. But this one did kind of just sort of happen.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
Well, besides the New York Voices, you're also a member of this all-star vocal group called Moss, featuring Kate McGarry, Theo Blackman, Lauren Kinnon, and Luciana Souza.
Yeah.
Now, how did this come about?
Yeah, we were all it's funny. It really did start by Lou and I. We were all friends, not great. Like, I was really good friends with Theo Blackman. He and I were teaching at the Manhattan School of Music, and Lauren and I obviously sing in New York Voices together. I didn't know Kate as well at the time, and she since then has become one of my dearest friends in the world. But Lou also taught at the Manhattan School of Music for a while I was there, and we met on a train. We both ended up on a train going from New Jersey into Manhattan one night, and she goes, you know, it's always been my dream to put a collective of people together, sort of like what you would do in college, where, you know, it's just, let's try some stuff, you know, like, let's all step outside of our comfort zones and, you know, get together and just, let's all play different instruments. Let's just create some things, you know, like kind of back in the good old days when you were in school and there was time to do stuff like that. Right. And so she's like, I've always wanted to do something like that with you. And I said, well, you know, I'm such a Lou fan. I mean, it's just, you know, she's such an amazing artist, you know. So I was like, you know, sign me up. And then we said, well, who else could we bring into this fold? And then Kate and Theo and Lauren all kind of came into being. And we started meeting at Lou's apartment on the Upper West Side. You know, we'd all bring food because that was sort of important. And then it just sort of all kind of started coming together rather quickly. And we performed at Joe's Pub in Manhattan a couple times and a couple of smaller halls. And then the label Sunnyside said, why don't you document this and put an album together? And so we did. We just kind of – and with all our schedules, it's just nuts. I mean, it's a joke. It was always a joke. We'd get – at the end of rehearsal, we'd all go, okay, when are we meeting next? And between – and we'd get out our calendars. And it was just a joke, you know. So we had this one weekend in August, and we all just lived at the studio for 2 days in August, and we put this album together called Moss. And it's really has resonated with people. People really seemed to really dig it. And it got like a best of and downbeat for the first decade of this century. It's definitely gone over well. So, you know, the goal would be to do more, but it's just when, you know, is always the problem. So, but we're hoping to get together again in the future. But it's a love fest. You know, it's like we're still in the honeymoon phase. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's really fun.
Well, you've certainly had an opportunity to work with a lot of great musicians over the years, including people like Michael Brecker, John Hendricks, Mark Murphy, George Benson, David Byrne,
I know.
Even.
Wild, right?
And Fred Hirsch, Paquito de Rivera. They've both been in the studios here at WMUK.
Nice.
And also this wonderful singer-songwriter whom I'm a huge fan, Jonathan Brook.
Oh, I love Jonathan, yeah.
So, I mean, speaking of songwriters like Jonathan
yeah.
And yourself, of course, I'm fascinated by the process, you know, how you create these songs with music, lyrics that can evoke different types of emotion
mm-hmm.
In the listener. And how do you create your music and what's your process like?
There's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. Sometimes a lyric will – well, first of all, I always carry a little digital – well, right now it's my iPhone. You know, you have the voice memo. And so I'll be – once again, I just left New York, so this is all kind of in the past now. But I would be on the subway riding into town and all of a sudden, you know, something would just hit me and I'd grab my phone and I'd just – sing into my iPhone this idea, because those are the best – that's the best stuff, you know, the stuff that comes out of nowhere, not the stuff where you're sitting at a piano and go, okay, be brilliant. You know, that's never – that's not usually very great process, but I've certainly tried to do that as well. But, yeah, when they come out of nowhere, that's it. And then I'll just – and then I would just – go back and listen to that recording, whether it's a lyric or it's a sounds like the hook of a chorus, or I'll sing a bass line. You know, it's a little bit of anything, and then the ideas just come from that. Sometimes full disclosure. Sometimes I will get a lyric idea, and I will pretend I'm talking into my phone to someone when I'm really just recording lyric ideas. Because I'm so embarrassed that I'm talking into my phone and not really talking to anybody, but you know, something will come that gets you all kind of fired up, whether it's good or bad, and then I'll just say just record this, just record these thoughts, and that has turned into some pretty passionate lyrics, I think. You know, when the stuff that comes up from that place where you're just either really excited or really mad or really influenced by a situation or a person or a, you know, that it's good to get that stuff down. And that's where I think my lyrics come from, a place of either something I don't understand that I'm really frustrated about, or, you know, kind of comes from a little bit of everything. Sometimes it's just a groove and a four chord vamp that I'll just start playing. And, you know, sometimes those feel so good. And then a tune evolves from that. I used to be more of a lyric first guy, and now I think I'm more of a music first guy. So I don't know why. I don't know how that evolved, but I don't know. Maybe it's still a little combination of both. But I feel like more I get tunes written, and then and they'll have sounds. I'll sing sounds, and then I'll try to match lyrics to go with those sounds, because I think I sang those sounds for a reason. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and I try to match the sound, because it sings easier or it just feels right. So
the sound is part of this emotion.
Exactly. So you kind of, but once again, there's all different ways that things get started, for sure. Or I've been reading some poems by different poets that I love, and so I'll either set them or I'll paraphrase that poem into my own language and write a song that way. That's been a fairly successful way of working lately. The song Mad Heaven is based on a poem by a Spanish poet that I loved, and instead of just setting that poem, I just took what I thought his poem meant and just paraphrased it, and now it's mine. You know, it's my words, but inspired by someone else, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, as you're writing, though, and these tunes are kind of evolving and being pieced together sometimes, I mean, how do you know when the tune is finished or ready for the public?
When you can't stand another day of not presenting it in some way, I think. Do you know what I mean? When you're just like, even if it's just that you want to get a response like, yes, that works, or no, that doesn't, you know? When you're just like, I have to try this out because it's making me nuts. Mm. I think that's it. And sometimes they're not done, or sometimes I'm horrible with endings. I'm a horrible ending of a song guy. Intros, bring them on, you know, but endings, I'm just, you know, because you don't want it to be, you know, I mean, you don't want it to be stupid, you know, and whether the song ends up or down, these are all just things I really just, you know, spend a lot of time on. Like, what kind of ending should this song have? What leads up? Is it an up or is it a down? Is it a, you know, strong, quick finish? Does it fade out? Does it linger? Yeah. That is one of the hardest parts of the whole process for me. Yeah, for sure.
I like that idea that you can't stand not.
Yeah, you just want to share it. You know, yeah. it's like, you know, I think I've said this before. It's kind of like having a kid. You know, and you have this kid in front of people and people go, wow, what an ugly baby. Or they go, you know, that's what a beautiful child. You know, and you know, hopefully, you know, but I'm thinking of Seinfeld, that the ugly baby episode. I'm sorry. But yeah, you just want to give it a go, you know, and you just get itchy to perform it. So that's usually, and then I will either say, okay, this is the ending. And I've changed endings. I've changed things after the first or second performance of things, for sure. Things evolve.
Well, you mentioned this song, Mad Heaven. Mm-hmm. You just kind of touched on it. Would you like to play that for
sure,
us?
Sure, sure. This is a song off the last album I released that came out about a year and a half ago, strangely enough, called Mad Heaven. And yeah, title track, a poem by Antonio Machado, who's a Spanish poet that I loved. And so this is sort of my take on a poem of his.
Last night as I felt it all return, the wisdom of a million lessons learned, I knew it all just as it was smiling to me like my first love, a sudden shift, a welcome peace of mind. Though the world is cruel and crazy, I must make this mad heaven mine. For so long I felt myself resigned, begrudging those who wish I'd be denied. I would disappear, fears chased me all over mountains, and yearning for a piece of the sky. Though the world is cruel and crazy, I must make this mad heaven mine, mine, mine. Oh, circling all around, no more reaching for answers I will never find. My gods, my heroes all come falling softly to the ground. Last night when life returned a friend, instead of mocking me again and again and again, it said love's the only fire to warm a winter's heart and rekindle the soul's desire. Though my eyes have seen the glory, I must make this mad heaven mine. Make amends with an age-old story. I must make this mad heaven mine.
There's actually one more chorus that gets all even bigger and bigger, but in the interest of time and without a band, it gets pretty cranked.
I'm so sure.
Yeah. Anyway, but that's Mad Heaven.
Yeah. That was one of your quick endings.
It is. Yes. See what I mean? Anyway, yeah.
So I'm curious to know, Peter, who some of your influences are. I mean, we've talked about poetry a little bit. You seem to draw from an eclectic mix of sources and mm-hmm. musical genres. So first of all, I'd like to know who inspires you as a vocalist and then who really inspires you as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm. As a songwriter, you know, in both – the answer to both those questions is pretty disparate. It's kind of all over the place because I just always – even when I was a kid, you know, my brother – I have an older brother and sister, and they just turned me on – I'm forever grateful to them because they turned me on to so much great music. My brother was, you know, the Beatles and Steely Dan and, you know, Stevie Wonder, and my sister was Joni Mitchell, who, you know, will probably – I don't know. If I had to pick like one person, it's probably Joni, I guess, because I just – you know, I was infatuated with her music since I literally was like 5 years old, you know. So that's a big – if I ever met her, I'd faint because I wouldn't know what I would say to her. I'd just turn into a complete babbling moron because I wouldn't know what to even say to her, you know. But Steely Dan is really up there as a major. I just love – I always loved that stuff when I was a kid. My brother – played a recording of theirs in his car, in his Pinto wagon when we were living in Colorado. I remember that as a real life-changer moment. I was like, wow. It was the album Pretzel Logic with Ricky Don't Lose That Number and, you know, Parker's Band and all these, and, you know, it just blew my mind. So that was a big deal. And Stevie Wonder's, you know, Songs in the Key of Life was a biggie. But there's a lot of singer-songwriters, tons of singer-songwriters. And then later on it became more jazz people like Cedar Walton, and I love Fred Hersch's music, of course. And I don't know, just it's really all over the map. I like a lot of classical music too. I'm a huge, like, kind of more kind of Benjamin Britten and Samuel Barber and like those guys, you know. So it's really all over the map from a songwriting perspective. And then of course I love like Rodgers and Hart and Billy Strayhorn, and you know, so. I teach a class in Great American Songbook, and I just gave them the assignment of a Johnny Mercer or a Jimmy Van Heusen tune. And I mean, some of the tunes, you know, I know Johnny Mercer's up there in terms of being super well known, but I feel like Jimmy Van Heusen is not nearly as well known as he should be, and unbelievable songwriter, you know. So anyway, and then as a singer, once again, a little bit everybody. The first album I bought when I was a kid was Sly and the Family Stone's Greatest Hits. So that's the first album I bought with my money that I earned from doing chores. And then from that, it was, you know, James Taylor, you know, all kinds of people. But Nat King Cole, you know, Chet Baker, gosh, yeah, everybody. So CB as a singer too, of course. So there's many, many more which are all escaping me right now, but that's kind of the main people.
Well, it all comes together, and it sounds like
kind of a wild
Peter
way.
Eldridge. You know?
Yeah, I guess
mean, it's even a little bit difficult to classify you.
Yeah,
you
know, I know. I know.
Are
know
you jazz?
It is.
Are you pop song singer songwriter?
Yep,
I mean,
yep.
You're Peter Eldridge.
I think that's becoming not just for me, but I think for a lot of people that is becoming a lot more. Almost the norm, as opposed to because people are just mixing it up. And jazz, the stigma of if it doesn't sound like 1957, there's no point of this, is over, you know. And so thankfully, you know, and so I think a lot of people who are considered jazz artists, you know, would never be considered jazz artists 10 years ago, you know, so which is great.
Right.
Because jazz needs to evolve for it to stay alive. And so so I'm thrilled that whole, you know, like what they used to be called the jazz police or whatever, that seems to have just kind of fallen by the wayside, just out of either necessity or that jazz as an art form was dying. And so it's thankfully it's being, you know, resuscitated and coming back around and growing and expanding.
Peter, not only are you writing and performing, but you're also called on to do clinics and masterclasses all over the world. You were head of the vocal jazz faculty at Manhattan School of Music for a decade.
For almost two decades.
Almost two decades.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you're teaching at Berklee in Boston.
Yeah.
And you're an artist in residence right here at Western Michigan University.
Which I'm thrilled about. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much good stuff going on here. It's a great school. And I am not just saying that. There's just, you know, the students are really cool. They're really talented. And now that, you know, Greg Jaspers is here. And I just think he's, and Jeremy Siska. I mean, you know, I mean, these guys are, they just are really focusing. They're just making this into such a viable and exciting music department. It's very exciting what's going on here, I think, really.
Yeah, it's really an exciting time.
Yeah.
I mean, we're super happy to have you here, and I think we're all really looking forward to the impact that you're going to have on our students and our community.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm you know, truly honored to be a part of this, and that, you know, there's just, yeah, there's, it's incredible stuff happening here. So, truly.
Peter, we'd love to hear another one of your songs.
Absolutely. This is a song, originally an instrumental tune. It was a lullaby for my sister and her husband adopted a little girl from China a number of years ago. And I wrote this as a welcome to your new life lullaby for her. And Ben Whitman, who works with me a lot on producing my stuff and plays drums and stuff, he's amazing. And he's like, you know, you should write lyrics to that. That should be sung. And I kind of always do what he says. So I started writing it about her, you know, and the lyrics were just getting like more and more insipid with every, you know, line. So I was like, okay, I have to go down another path. And so it became about something else entirely. So this is a song called That Which Can't Be Explained.
Shake a fist up at the sky as I build upon this shaky refuge and sing myself a lullaby. I will walk that fine line between the sacred and the profane. It's the game on playing, loving that which can't be explained. It's the game I'll keep on playing, loving that which can't be explained.
Ooh. It's really beautiful, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
It really kind of has this hopeful sound to it.
It is. It is. It is. It is absolutely hopeful. Yeah. So it's searching, but yeah, definitely tries to be on the hopeful side of things. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I love the song that you do on the cardboard box with the brushes where you accompany yourself. And so today I brought a cardboard box and we have some brushes here. Could you play Full Grown Man for us?
Okay. All right. We'll do. So this is a song called Full Grown Man. It's on an album I released in 2005 called Decorum. And the track is the recorded version has horns and two different electric bass and acoustic bass and all kinds of stuff. But we are doing the unplugged version today. And I'm a little intimidated that I'm playing this in front of Mr. Keith, but I will try to rise above my trepidation here. So this is Full Grown Man.
Full grown man on the playground. Another full grown man on the playground. Full grown man on the playground. Pushing and shoving on the playground. Some things you never get past. Some things just last and last. Yeah, we may be older, but all the rules remain. We're still playing all of the same games. And it's still cops and robbers. Still who's the most popular. Still who's gonna rise above the crowd. It's getting hotter on this teeter-totter. We are all parents, sons and daughters. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down. Full-grown man on the playground. Another full-grown man on the playground. Full-grown man on the playground. Kicking and screaming on the playground. And jealousy still rears its ugly head. And you still got to be told to make your bed. Hey, what's that secret she just said? And how come they picked him instead? Well, I guess he's God, but I ain't God. And how he wants what that guy's got. But he's just using her to get ahead. And that one's feeling so left out. Her, she can't shake off her doubt. But nothing touches that one over there. Full-grown man on the playground. Another full-grown man on the playground. Full-grown man on the playground. Kicking and screaming on the playground. Pick me. Come on. Nothing ever changes on the playground. Pick me. Pick me. Oh, buddy, won't you pick me? Nothing ever changes on the playground. You're such a big boy now, and yet you still don't know quite how to live. And let live, and let live, and let live. Yeah, you're such a big boy now, and yet you still don't know quite how to live. And let live, and let live, and let live. Yeah, you're such a big boy now, and yet you still don't know quite how to live. And let live, and let live, and let live. Just another full-grown man. Another full-grown man. Another full-grown man.
Yeah. Peter Eldridge. That's such a fun tune.
Oh, thanks. Thank you, my brother.
It's really a treat to see you play Brushes on, on the box.
It's sort of a visual, isn't it? Sorry out there in internet land and stuff. But yeah. But thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, well, we really look forward to hearing more from your solo albums, your compositions, and, of course, the group Moss and New York Voices.
Yeah.
And thanks again for being here today and sharing your music with us.
Thank you. My pleasure, really. Thanks a lot.